counterparts of my job at Tech is I get the opportunity to work with our State Beef Cattle Improvement Association, or BCIA, that many of you folks in the room have similar organizations in your state, and our Central Bull Test Program. That's one of the funner things I get to do, and I'm going to share some thoughts, and they're certainly not necessarily unique to me, but thoughts that I've gathered as I've worked with the various breeders that participate in our state bull test program, and their thoughts, and try and convey some of those things as they relate to our topic this afternoon. Virginia has a lot of history, and performance testing is one of those strong histories that we have in the beef cattle industry here. We have a state BCIA that was formed in the 1950s, which I believe was one of the first state organizations relative to performance testing and beef cattle improvement that was formed in the country. We're entering our 47th year in terms of feeding and selling bulls in the state central bull test. But I'm not here today to talk to you about the history. There are many in the room that could do a much better job than that than I could. But I think the important question is, when we look at our program today, it's maintained a lot of strength and participation. It's still very, very valid and a very important source of genetics to our commercial producers in the state. Try and answer the question or address a little bit. How has it remained vital? How has it remained competitive? How has it remained relevant here in the state of Virginia when, as I travel around and look around, in many states, programs very similar to it might not have quite the strength and participation that it does here in the state. And what it boils down to, really, is strength in numbers, the topic we're here to talk about this afternoon. And really, it relates as much to marketing and providing a service as it does to evaluation of performance. Be the first to admit, and I think our breeders would tell you, that our number one goal, of course, is to get those bulls developed, to evaluate their performance. As Harvey mentioned, there's a long history of that across the country, and certainly that's our foremost goal, is to provide an avenue for breeders to do that. But really the reason that our bull test program has been successful is due to the breeders and their commitment, and their strength in numbers, their ability to work together to really put together a product and a set of bulls that commercial bull buyers want. Why is that? I'd like to address that just a little bit and give you a little background. We currently have two stations that we operate in the state. We feed four different sets of bulls, both fall and springborn. We have three different sales that those bulls are marketed on. We're feeding about in excess of 500 bulls a year and selling close to 300 of those through the three different sales, so a pretty big number in this part of the world if you consider all those to be one entity. Sally and Bill talked this morning, I think it was Bill, that showed some numbers relative to the cattle industry, and that 70% of the producers in the U.S. have cow herds that are 100 or less. And that's certainly true in the state of Virginia, and that's certainly true of the breeders that cooperate and work with the Central Bull Test Program. And one of the reasons that it's been successful is we have a very large number of breeders that are relatively modest in size. Many of them don't have the resources or the time or simply the facilities to properly develop and manage bulls, performance evaluate them, if you will. And so a centralized program that can provide that service makes a lot of sense. But as I mentioned, certainly doing that alone, there's lots of folks that could do that. Many of our breeders could do that on their own, on their farm, has not been enough. It's really the value that they've been able to add through some of the specifications that they set up. They really operate what I like to call a branded program. I think the bull test program in this state has a lot of identity. There's quality control involved in the process, and I'll talk about each one of those. And the other thing that I would certainly mention is we look at the evolution of performance testing, and the reason that we began central bull tests in the first place, of course, was to measure daily gain and calculate ratios, and then we had the advent of EPDs and contemporary groups, and we worked very hard to adopt to those technologies. And I think one thing that certainly, as I've come to Virginia and learned to appreciate very quickly, is that in this state it has a very long and storied history. Performance testing does, and the bull test program, as we look around to some of our leading breeders that we've got in the state, some of which you'll have the opportunity to meet and visit with their operations in the next couple of days, really got their start and participated in the bull test early on and have grown and become big enough to have their own production sales. But by and large, the vast majority of those have come up through the central bull test program in this state, and I think that speaks volumes. what has the state program done here under the leadership of the breeders in terms of the standards that they've established and so forth? One is they've worked very hard to adapt technology. In this room, preaching to the choir a little bit, but in terms of some of the requirements include enrollment in your breed's performance program. For Angus, that's AHIR. All the bulls have to have birth and weaning weight records collected. They all have to have individual EPDs printed on them, which, again, for this group, certainly, I think, goes without saying, but I don't think that's true across the board for all breeders that we work with in the industry. Another example would be a technology. Virginia Tech was very much involved in some of the early adoption of the ultrasound technology, and the bull test was a forum to demonstrate that, to get that technology out in the field for breeders to look at and see how it would be utilized and carry it forward. We're doing DNA genotyping, relatively simple at this point, and have just done coat color, but certainly down the road, some of the things that Ronnie Green talked about, I envision that we'll be involved with. We're currently doing a demonstration project relative to electronic ID in the program, which gives it some exposure and gives people hands-on experience and a demonstration project, if you will. One thing that I would say, and with several of the participating breeders are sitting around the room, and one of the hot topics is always some of the standards that we establish, and I would say that in this state, the Central Bull Test Program has not tried to be everything to everybody. One of those examples is we have minimum yearling weight EPDs that bulls have in order to test and sell them. That happens to be breed average for Angus bulls, which I believe is plus 67 now, John. And the reason for that is we've got a very successful feeder calf marketing program in the state that's operated by our Cattlemen's Association. That's a value-added feeder calf program that deals with vaccinations, health, weaning, backgrounding, etc. Very similar to other programs that exist around the country. One of the unique things about that program is source verification and documented genetics. In other words, through that program, commercial producers can identify calves that are out of superior bulls within each breed. Superior bulls being defined by certain growth EPDs of the sire of those calves. So we've connected with that particular standard and that marketing program, and all the bulls that are marketed through the Central Bull Test qualify to sire feeder calves that qualify for that program. And that's the reason that came about. Another component that's been very important relative to is third-party certification in terms of the data that's collected, in terms of the breeding soundness exams, in terms of visual inspections for structural correctness, type scoring, etc. But just to summarize things a little bit, really it's all about strength in numbers, relatively small to modest-sized seed stock producers, which really have some outstanding genetics. As they join forces and get together, they can really have a lot of power in terms of marketing. We had over 100 individual breeders participate a year ago in the program, primarily from Virginia, but also from surrounding states, Maryland, West Virginia, North Carolina, and Tennessee. Where most of those breeders hailed from. And again, it's all about the strength in numbers, and it's really a pleasure for me to have the opportunity to work with them. So hopefully that gives a little different perspective perhaps than some of our other three panelists. We've got some individual members that are sitting out in the crowd that I might call on if we get individual questions about participation in that. But at this time, we've got several minutes left and plenty of time for open discussion and forum. What questions do you folks have from the floor? Yeah, Mike? Well, maybe they don't understand my dialect. I better slow down.
Always If you look at technology and how it develops, it's not just in the cattle that the technology is moving forward. I think we'll have interactive sales on the internet that work pretty soon. I think a lot of the reasons that historically cattle have sold in a smaller area is because we historically have not moved around that much. I know when I was growing up, my grandparents lived 2 hours away, and that was quite a trip to go see my grandparents. My wife has worked 2 hours from home before, and that was a normal commute. So I think part of what we're talking about here is just an evolution of people and their habits. We have a national genetic pool now. We use bulls from Montana. So the genetics are the same essentially across the country. So I think you will see that area enlarge as technology develops.
I would address that. I think a lot of it depends on the customer base that you have and the number of bulls you have to sell. We've talked about looking at doing a superior deal like Joe and them have, but we have so many local customers that really live within a 200-mile radius of our farm. Those are the people that we have solid relationships with, and we want to keep servicing those people at this point as a priority. We don't want them to feel like they can't come to our sale and buy a bull because they're all going somewhere far away from our place. So we're targeting that market. But if we get to the point from a supply and demand perspective that we need to, try to sell on more of a national level, we'll certainly do that. And I think some programs are already at that point. But from our perspective, with no more bulls than we have to market, we're shooting for the local market in the short term anyway.
Bill, did you have a question in the back?
We do have mics out here. Scott, if anybody has questions, Jim or I'll try to get, maybe it'll be easier for people to hear the questions. Wally?
Okay, I'd kind of like to ask what unique service each one of you provide to your customers that seems to be most appreciated by your customers or binds those customers to you just a little better each year.
Wally, I don't know that I can answer that. I've always tried to do whatever a customer needed to help them with their operation. 1 year we had a sale in Florida. A lady called me up about 2 weeks after it, and she said, I was unable to get there. Really wanted a bull from you. Need a Brangus bull also. And I got on the phone with a neighbor and found a really good Brangus bull. Took my Angus bull and 500 miles to deliver that bull to help the lady out with her operation. And I guess just, daily talking to those folks and being involved with them and knowing what they need, I can't say that I do anything that for everyone that I could recommend is, the way to go. I just try to do everything that I can to help every customer that I have to be successful with their operation, whether it's information or contact to an order buyer or whatever. It's just, being involved daily and trying to give them the advantage of the experience and the contacts I've made over 40 years.
Wally, I would certainly agree with Harvey. We do some things for people, but I'm not sure that's the most important aspect of what happens. I believe it's evolved somewhat to the point that people don't come to a bull sale looking for the best bull. They come looking for specific characteristics. And I think if there's a customer service that we provide, it's accurately identifying what each bull is. Best is sort of a relative term. I think our obligation to our customers is to accurately identify the different characteristics of the bulls that we're offering.
I can't point to any one specific thing that we do either. The things that we feel like are really important, though, are getting to know as many of our customers as we can and actually getting onto their farms. Things that seem to be important to them are listening to their needs. And if they call you, like Harvey said, if they call you and it's not a really convenient time for you to hear about the herd health problem that they're having or anything like that, you've got to make the time because they are your customer. And they'll go to somebody that will listen to them if you won't. So I think it's just really important that we want to service them, because if you don't, they'll find somebody that will. And we deliver our bulls also. I think that's a biggie that Jay touched on. I think that people really like that. They like for you to come to their farm and see what they're doing and show you their cattle. I mean, they're just like we are. We love to have people come and visit at our place. So I think that's important.
Well, in the context of Virginia BCA, I'd say it's first would be providing the service in terms of bull development and feeding, and secondly would be the assembly of a critical mass and a number of bulls that's going to attract a wide range of potential customers to come together to make it economically feasible and viable from a marketing standpoint. Yes, sir.
Each of you talked about reaching out to more long-distance customers. What kind of guarantees do you put on your bulls for sight unseen purchases? And also, what kind of guarantees do you put on your bulls for first year guarantees and so forth?
Our veterinarian tells us that we're nuts, but we unconditionally guarantee bulls for the first year after purchase. That doesn't include injury, but if for any other reason, if they're not satisfied with the bull, he loses weight and doesn't develop like they think that he should, we'll take him back. We want the customer to be happy and come back and buy bulls from us again. And I think Keith Evans one time said that if somebody has a good experience, they'll tell 10 people, tell one person. If they have a bad experience, they'll tell over 10. And I firmly believe that. And we just try to do unto others as we'd have somebody do unto us. So if we buy something we're not happy with and we sure want it to be replaced or made right, and we will do that. We'll either take the bull back, or if we're pretty sure that the bull needs to go to the stockyard, we'll let them take that bull to the stockyard and give them a credit to use in the next sale. Or if they need a bull right then, we'll try to find one to replace them. But it's worked for us, and we haven't had anybody take advantage of our guarantee. In all the years that we've been doing it, we felt like every time that somebody called us and said they weren't happy, that they were pretty much justified in not being happy and tried to make it right with them.
I would certainly agree with everything that was said. We do sell bulls to folks that all they see is a video. We have had to make bulls good because there was white on the scrotum and they didn't see it at the video, and we made the bull good. I think you approach this with the idea that you're going to make folks happy and you move forward. Some of the best customers we have, the first bull they had a problem, and we made it right, and now they're good customers. So it's a philosophical point. Our lawyer, our banker says to do it a different way, but if somebody's not satisfied with the bull, we're going to make it right.
I agree with what both have said, and I guess in 30-some years of selling bulls, that I've only had one person try to take advantage of a situation, and he turned an Angus bull in with a group of mature Brahma bulls and out with a herd of cows, and they just chased him to the woods, and, you know, he wouldn't come out. But I think the integrity of the people that we deal with, we've got to just make a bull good. If they call and are unhappy with him, it's our responsibility to make sure that they have a bull that's functional and they're happy with. And, you know, sometimes you get a bull back that has, been abused to the point where he just physically can't produce semen. You know, in a few months of feeding him and tending to him, he comes back and he can, you can do again. You just have to learn from these things, and stress to the person the next time that, they got to do the management part to make him functional. But, you know, I just really have never had a problem with anybody trying to abuse getting a new bull, and I just do whatever it takes and don't publish a guarantee that says anything at all, but just if there's a problem, we just take care of it.
I guess, I mean, a kind of a follow-up to your all's situation, how do you all handle those guarantees or backing up bulls? Is that all left to the individual breeder?
It is, Bill. That's, to be honest, I was going to comment. That's one of the challenges and one of the things that comes up continually in committee discussions is in the context of what this group is doing, how do we act like a single entity that might be an individual firm or a couple of firms that have that, that are able to offer that guarantee when we represent so many different breeders who have different opinions and those kind of things. So we've, fortunately, we've been very fortunate in terms of the guarantee that we offer is actually that's published by the American Angus Association relative to bull fertility and soundness and documentation of those types of things. We've been very fortunate in that any problems that we have had, that guarantee between the buyer and the seller, much like it is in a consignment sale, if you will. But we have not had an instance, at least since I've been here, where we have not satisfactorily resolved that between the bull buyer and the seller. In the back.
This morning we heard quite a bit about integrated marketing and becoming more alliance-based in terms of marketing calves to feedlots. How do you foresee establishing a competitive market for your bull customers' feeder calves down the line if the live auction system becomes more marginalized and we end up in a situation where we're dealing far more directly with the ultimate finisher and seller of our cattle?
Thank you, Robert. I think the fact that we're not marketing commodity bulls gives us an advantage. I think it's our benefit to form those relationships, Robert, because as Jan pointed out, there is demand for the type of product that we're producing, and I believe that demand is on the increase. So I think we have a tremendous advantage in building those relationships. As a matter of fact, I look forward to building those relationships. I certainly don't fear them. If I was in a different breed producing a different type of bull for a different end product, I guess I would be concerned about them. But with the product that we're producing and the possibilities of utilizing the genetics that we have, I think those alliances will help us.
Bill, we had another question right here in front.
I manage a commercial feed yard in Kansas. My question is, what services can we provide you, the customer, to help you market your bulls for your customer?
Well, we haven't been involved, I guess, on a large enough scale for me to answer that as well as a lot of people in the audience could. But just the fact that on the lotes that we have not retained ownership on, there have been quite a few feed yards that have been willing to share back the carcass data with us. And I understand that can play to their disadvantage when it comes time to sell cattle the next year. If they perform well, you can use that to get some other people to bid against you. But I think that's a real positive step that even if they, especially a feed yard that would be willing to provide us that with carcass data to help our customers, even if we're not retaining ownership on them, I think that's a win for us because it helps us see what our customers need to do and it helps them. And like I say, I guess really the feed yard's the one that'll have to make the decision whether that's a good thing or not. But I guess the one thing else that I might say is if we're talking about strength in numbers, and I think that that's a real advantage we have being Angus breeders, that the journal will publish like the list every year of all the feed yards that are cooperating with NCAB feedlots and that kind of thing. I think the association does a pretty good job of letting us know which feed yards are really wanting to work with the Angus people, so I commend them for that and being helpful in that regard. As an individual feedlot, I guess it would be kind of difficult to have one-on-one contact with as many different bulls, feedstock producers, as there are. I don't really know anything else you could do.
I would think that you could visit some of the seed stock operators and see their operations. We've talked strength in numbers here, but there's also strengths in operations that have been in business a while and have got established. As Joe said, we have a national genetic program, but there's differences in cattle with the same EPDs because an EPD is an average of that group of cattle, and some people that have been in business for a while, or even if they've just been in business for 5 years or whatever, you've got to have a little bit of time to get a track history on the cattle that are there and see what they're doing. And I think that that's what Joe's saying with his program, is that they are treating those cattle alike so that people can recognize the differences in them. And if you as a feedlot operator came and saw our cattle and how they were raised and in your own mind evaluate the cattle, it helps you be able to maybe correspond with some of your customers that you've bought calves from, where you've seen bulls that are raised in a realistic way and see what they look like after they've been developed.
Folks, the countdown is on to John Crouch. We got time for one more question. If there's one more from the audience over here.
What is your year-round contact schedule with your customers, and how many times per year do you contact your customers, and how do y'all go about doing that?
We have a website that we try real hard to keep updated that we don't always do a real good job of, and our customers remind me of that sometimes. So I looked on the website, you hadn't updated it, have you? So that's something that that I need to do a better job of, but that's one way that we make contact that requires a little effort on us to reach a lot of people. We do at least 2 newsletters a year. We send out bull test reports on our own farm deal, and we make at least 1 personal contact after that bull is bought. Each year before that year's up, we make a personal contact, whether it be by phone or visit, and make sure that the person's happy and not having problems with them, and just kind of listen to see if there's anything that we need to do different. So at least once a year.
See, we don't do enough of it, and I guess it doesn't matter how much of it you do, that's still not enough. We also put out a newsletter and have a website. What we would consider the volume buyers, we try to visit each of those on their place and ask them what their concerns are, not just about the bulls, but in the future as well. But I think another area that sometimes we overlook is meetings like this. I look out in this crowd, and there's a number of people here that are our customers, and I think it's important for us to be involved in associations like NCBA and like the American Angus Association and like the local Cattlemen's Association. I think all of those are important also.
I completely agree. We have a website, but I'm computer illiterate, so I can't even pull it up and look at it to see if we're updated or not. Pat does a terrific job of trying to keep it updated the way I would like to have it. I don't even send emails because just never have gotten that close with the computer. But I do a lot of talking on the telephone with helping people sell their calves and talking to order buyers and, you know, I just may be a nuisance, but I use the telephone a lot.
Folks, I think we've had an excellent discussion, and I thank my fellow panel members. To summarize things, what I hear in terms of strength in numbers, and certainly there's a lot of you in the crowd that are doing an excellent job with that, and I'd encourage you and to continue to do it, but certainly it boils down to a lot of strong cooperation, a lot of strong listening, and most importantly, a strong focus on our customers and ultimately the consumer. And please help me in thanking the remainder of the panel for their time and efforts here this afternoon.